Mind if I do?
Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Well, if you can remember, last weekend, it was a general election. Whew. Rod Oram, you with us?
I am. Good morning, Mikey.
What about that general election? Woo!
Well, it's completely fascinating. It's obviously one that's going to be much analysed and debated, and no doubt a few myths will arise along the way of coming years, because it was, I think, one of our most remarkable elections in a long time, for, you know, scads of reasons.
The results are quite obviously yet to be determined. There's a lot for people like yourselves, political commentators, but people that are knowledgeable in such of such worlds. Your jobs have by no means finished yet.
No, indeed. And the special votes are interesting, and they might move things around by a seat or two. Probably the disadvantage of National and the advantage of Labour and or Greens.
Now, why is that? Why is that? Because, I mean, that seems to be the considered viewpoint. Why is that? Why is that reasoning? Because Labour voters are just a little bit more lapsed, or tend to be more adventuresome and stray across the world, or what?
No, there's essentially two factors. This time around was the first time the Electoral Commission allowed people to register and vote at the same time during advanced registration.
Yep.
You couldn't do that on the day itself.
And that counts as a special vote?
Yes, it does, because that needs to be put aside on election day to then go back and verify that person's registration.
To make sure that they're not just double-dipping and going around and doing that at 30 different polling stations.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, sure.
So that accounts for the big surge in the number of special votes. Then, of course, you do get people who are overseas and the like. And for a whole bunch of reasons, and I'm not sure it's because necessarily people are inclined to vote Labour are more adventurous and go more on their own ease. I mean, but there is a well-proven pattern there, that those special votes do tend come down more on the side, on the left side of the spectrum, left of centre rather than right. However, this is a bit different because a lot of those special votes are going to be people here in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Now, again, it looks as though a lot of those are younger voters, but you can get young Nats, as you can get young Labour and young Greens. It's not entirely sure quite how that's going to fall.
What are your thoughts on the Electoral Commission allowing that this year? Do you think it's a good thing? Do you think it's well overdue, or do you think it may prove to be a problem?
No, I don't think it's a problem at all. They have very good ways of checking, I think it's a very robust system. So I'm all in favour of it, because we do have considerably lower turnout by younger voters. They feel quite turned off by politics. They're not sure what use it is for them to vote. Many of them do. And therefore, trying to encourage them into the system, you know, going to where they are, to encourage them to register, I think that's a great thing.
The results being all in the favour of National, that they had a big party on, they had their hands in the air, we're victorious, we've taken this, you didn't do this, we did this, that sort of vibe on election night, a little bit presumptuous?
Not entirely presumptuous, because they have ended up with more seats now. The very interesting argument, though, is do we look at seats or do we look at popular vote? And this is kind of exactly the same argument in the United States versus popular vote versus
Electoral College.
Electoral College. So John Key was very robust on this after the election. He was saying, you know, we've got a majority a clear majority for us. That's not actually strictly true.
Did he actually say we have, and for us?
Well, what did he say, we or National?
I do believe he washed his hands of the whole affair.
I mean, he's died in the ball.
Yuck.
So he's probably still a party member, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But he's wrong, because National doesn't have a majority of the seats. It has the largest number of seats, and it certainly doesn't have a majority of the popular vote. Now, it will probably, it might, and it won't get to a majority of the popular vote. So the very interesting argument, which is yet to be tested with MMP, who deserves best to form a government? Is it the group of parties that can form the largest coalition, i.e. the most number of seats, or is it a bloc led by the single party that won on its own the most number of seats?
Well, I've always believed from my limited handful of elections, I've been MMP elections. It's always been the former. That's how I've always known it to be. Is there a train of thought which says that that it should be the most seats?
I'm with you on that. Yeah. The whole idea of MMP, and this is the way MMP and coalition governments work in other parliaments that have it, is that it's moving us on from first past the post.
Yeah.
What National is doing is arguing that we're actually still in a first past the post environment, which isn't true.
Well, they are, aren't they, in the heads, really, it seems, a lot of the time.
And because they've certainly blown off a number of their minor support parties.
Yeah.
In fact, in this election, they've ditched all three because United Future's gone, Maori Party's gone, and they won't do anything with ACT because Winston Peters won't have anything to do with ACT. So that's how National treats its minor parties. It's a very difficult thing being a minor party, I'd have to say.
Carry
on. After you.
I was going to ask you what you thought of. I mean, obviously, you know, people have the right to decide on whoever they want to vote for, and it's up to each individual to get as informed as they can about what's going on in politics before they make that decision. A lot of people don't know squat about it. A lot of people don't care. I was wondering what you thought of how comfortable the Nats seem to be just in that last, especially in that last week, just bullshitting their way through the campaign, which I thought was incredibly distasteful and incredibly it really lowered the bar to me. I thought you know, standing there and just looking down the camera and just keeping a straight face while you're lying to people was a really low sort of a technique to use, but it works. It seems to work, and you wonder. I can't help but wonder. As I said, I remember saying to Bryce Edwards on the night that how big a lie would the government have to have told for people to go, what, you know, to actually care?
This is tricky. It's very clear about the things that they were saying, which were just plain wrong. So
let's give them the benefit of the doubt, which was just being nice, and say that they didn't lie; they just got things really wrong in some cases.
Let me just run you through some things. Bill English was completely wrong to say productivity is growing nicely. We're actually in a productivity recession. And he said that in the first leaders' debate, and he should know this economy inside out. So it's rather difficult to believe he believes that's right.
No one's seen more budgets than I have.
Correct. Joyce knows exactly how budgets are put together, and therefore to come up with a number of 11.7 billion by any reasonable analysis is way off the charts. You could argue perhaps around 2 or 3 billion, but that's a minor sum in tens of billions of government spending every year. Bill English was completely wrong about trade. He said in Q&A that the weekend before the election that New Zealand's trade has diversified a lot. It hasn't. In the last 20 years, dairy has become more dominant as a percentage of exports, and he should know about that. It's hard to believe he doesn't. And he was very selective in the analysis he used to claim that incomes have risen twice as fast as inflation. First of all, he ignored housing costs in that, which have risen three times.
Whose incomes?
Yeah, exactly. And that note in particular, I'd have thought voters would have gone, hang on a second, my income hasn't risen twice as fast as inflation, and I've got these huge bills for housing and everything else. And so I think that being wrong about things like that would actually be very counterproductive. So not only does it undermine his credibility as somebody who knows the economy inside out, but it's just, intuitively, and voters just go, well, no, that can't be right. And in fact, I'll tell you a story. I was down here in Christchurch Friday, 2 weeks ago, and I was having a coffee at the airport. I must have been finishing a presentation I was going to do later on in the day. And there were two border people from MPI there. And we got chatting, and they, you know, they've gone backwards in the last 20 years in real terms and income, and they're pretty unhappy about it. So I think there's other people like that out there.
Yeah, I'm at a loss to try and think of anybody who's actually whose income's gone up significantly in the last 5 or 10 years. Really, to be honest.
Yeah. You know, voters are smart. Many of them, they're not necessarily diving down into all the complexities of policy. I mean, that's a pretty wonky thing to do. It's not everybody's cup of tea. But I think many voters are attuned to things like that. Now, but are other things at work? So Jacinda Ardern was immensely effective personally, but Labour was still campaigning on a whole bunch of stuff it's tried in previous campaigns. There wasn't time to shift that. So that's why I think, you know, the analysis of the election has to be very deep and multifaceted rather than picking on some particular items.
Hey, Rod, we really are in limbo now until if Winston Peters sticks to his guns, which I assume he's going to, and not make any decision until those special votes are counted. I think that's good that he's done that. I think that's he would be remiss if he didn't.
But look, the thing that worries me enormously about Winston Peters is how shall I phrase this? He's a very irascible, combative person. I think he's getting more so with age. And there were certainly many times on the campaign trail where he was giving very strange answers to questions, rambling all over the place. And I don't know.
What are you suggesting, Rod Oran?
I don't know. I just don't know. All I know is that there is nobody in his caucus he's very much his own man. Nobody in caucus that can perhaps sort of settle him down a bit.
That's what I thought. There's no one who can say, oh, yeah, easy, mate.
Call it Winston, yeah.
Yeah, you call it shush, man, shush.
So I almost find myself in the position of feeling sorry for whichever party finds him up. but anyway, we'll see.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe that's something they have to take on board in the discussions as well. It's like, okay, what's he talking about? Don't know. Just say yes, and then we'll be the government. Yeah, but don't say yes. You can't just do that, can you?
No. The weirdest moment was on Morning Report when he sent someone, a guy.
Oh, that was strange, wasn't it?
And sent him down to the somebody down to the car to get this letter from 2003 or whatever that somehow proved he wasn't fired from government.
Yeah.
That is so weird that he is so obsessed by that.
He really just wants to make sure that the media never have it. You know, he wants to always try and be on top of the media, doesn't he? And it gets a bit boring.
So that's why I pity the party that gives him an opportunity to be fired for a third time from government.
Hey, Rod, thank you very much for taking some time to talk to us this morning. Always really appreciate it.
Oh, my great pleasure, Mikey. Great to chat.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Right.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.